Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Dr. Karen Lewis. My name is Dr. Roger Welton. We're both practicing veterinarians. How are you doing this evening, Dr. Karen?
I'm good.
Yeah?
I think we're going to have fun tonight. Yeah. We're both a little slap happy. This could be good.
We are indeed. It's a little bit later here for me. You know, it's Central Time is an hour before?
Yes.
Okay. I had to double check. It's been a while since I lived in Illinois. I'm trying to forget those days.
Still rubbing it in, aren't you? Okay.
Yeah, we had unseasonably cold weather here today. It was 61 degrees, and again, everybody was very stressed out about it. At any rate, well, how's the weather up there?
Oh, you know, we're in Illinois, so yesterday we had a winter storm warning.
Oh,
in the morning.
That's pretty fun, though.
And then by the afternoon, I was walking around without a coat.
Okay.
And all the snow was gone. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, I remember
Illinois.
I remember being in this, like, as you're approaching summer, you could have your heat and your air conditioning on in the same day.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. So I had an interesting week. One particular case I'd just like to bring up before we get into our one email that we have addressed to both of us, by the way, I'm happy to say. Hopefully you're feeling included now.
Yes.
I had a chocolate-covered raisin toxicity case this week. So,
wow.
You know, to our listeners, chocolate is potentially toxic to dogs, as are grapes. And, of course, a raisin is a dried-up grape. So you had your almost perfect storm.
Yeah, but, no, you need these sugar-free chocolate-covered raisins. Then you'd have the xylitol.
Xylitol.
And the yeah, so then you'd have the trifecta of death.
Right.
So,
Luckily, that was not the case. But it was an itty-bitty little Chihuahua Pomeranian mix. Believe it or not, not an uppity crazy little thing, like the sweetest little dog. Luckily, it all worked out really well. Dog's fine, just had a major liver enzyme spike. Interesting case because the dog's also an epileptic, so he's on phenobarbital. And ready for this, he also has Cushing's disease.
Oh, God.
Right? That's an adrenal disease, for those of you who never heard of that. So the boy's got stuff going on. He did not need this, but all is well that ends well. He's doing well. Did you come across anything interesting this week?
Good news. Oh, well, about an hour before we started our podcast, I had a pretty interesting one. I'm a house call veterinarian, and I had just finished a euthanasia. I do quite a bit of those, and it sounds really weird to say that I enjoy them sometimes, but I actually do, because when they're at home, they're surrounded by all their loved ones in their favorite bed. Sometimes they put on their theme song on the radio. I mean, like, it is like a celebration of their life. So
I
had.
That's interesting. I get that, though.
Yeah, it was. But this one was interesting because they had given the dog a significant amount of beer prior to my appointment to relax him. Well, they all were having significant amounts of beer.
They all were. So the dog and the owners. Oh,
yes. So they offered me some, too, and I declined. So, yeah. So anyway, after, you know, after the whole procedure was done, and I brought the dog back with me for cremation, and all the beer had leaked out of the dog because he drank a lot all over my car. So I was just cleaning beer out of my car and praying I didn't get pulled over to explain that to the cop about
why
the whole car smells like beer. So,
you know what?
It's always an adventure.
Here I thought I had this great, interesting case and story. You just one up the heck out of me on that one. Wow.
I'll treat you any day.
That's very, 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 very interesting. Well, may the boy rest in peace. You know, I'm glad he went out with a little bit of a buzz. You know,
It was a party, man.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
So be it. Whatever works to make it easier for all parties involved.
Yeah.
So shall we get to our mail?
Yeah, I think if I keep talking, God knows what I'll say. So yes.
So real quick before we get to the mail. Our topic tonight is why pay more. I'm actually encouraging you to pay more to get your animal spayed in my AHA accredited veterinary hospital. So I'm actually going to make the case for why you should pay more. What do you think about that, Dr. Karen?
Well, we were just talking about how you get what you pay for. So, yeah, but there are some low-cost spay-neuter clinics all around the country. And in St. Louis, where I am, we're actually really, really fortunate to have some really good low-cost spay-neuter clinics. I mean, no, it still does not compare to a spay or neuter in a AHA-approved clinic, but they're not the chop shops like some places can be. Sure. So, sure. But yeah, we can talk more about that, definitely.
That's awesome. So it's not just going to be like a hate session on the low cost, because you're gonna present a more positive slant on that. Unfortunately, my experience here in Florida has not been very positive, so I'm actually hoping to get some hope out of what you're going to tell me. So I'm really excited for that. So let's jump into our email. Doctors Roger and Karen. You like that? Doctors Roger and
Karen. Yay. I feel so included.
I have a 2-year-old Cocker Spaniel that appears to have a skin allergy. Boy, am I stuffed up tonight. My apologies, everybody. One thing about Florida, that's a rather organic area. I'm not an allergic person, but I think it's getting to me. So there you go. What?
Ha!
prop for a more temperate climate. Back to the email. She is constantly biting at her toes and itching her rear quarter every morning. Not sure if this is an important detail, but it seems to take place a lot more first thing in the morning when she wakes up. She is on Taste of the Wild dog food, although she does eat some, quote, accessory foods. I was wondering if there is a treatment that you would recommend. I have tried some shampoos that I was hoping would fix it with no resolve. This happens year-round and is not specific to the winter months here in Wisconsin. Hey, one of your people.
Hooray for the Midwest. Yeah, even colder than me, so hey.
There you go. You got some bragging rights there. I've been listening to your podcast for a couple of years now, and it's been very beneficial to the care of our dogs. Thanks for anything you may be able to offer, Dave. Well, thank you, Dave, for that great consultation. Thank you for being a 2-year fan. I'm absolutely flattered to know that you're one of those three people. I'm only kidding. So, Dr. Karen, why don't you weigh in on this one? I'm tired of hearing myself talk.
Oh, sure. Like, yeah. Listen to me. So it certainly could be an allergy. What I always tell people is it's always a good idea to check with your vet. We don't want to assume it's an allergy. If it's not, there are other diseases, thyroid disease, Cushing's disease, like Dr. Roger just talked about, that can cause, you know, itching, licking, things like that too. It could be something as simple as fleas. And I'm not saying that your dog is infested in fleas, because it probably isn't. But all it can take is, you know, one single flea to look at your dog cross-eyed and pff, your dog's itchy. So there are some over-the-counter things you can try, like antihistamines, Benadryl, Zyrtec, things like that. Fish oil, if you listened to our podcast a couple weeks ago, we talked about fish oil being helpful. But honestly, for allergies, your best bet, in my opinion, would be to actually have a really good talk with your veterinarian. And you might need to shop around, find a good veterinarian who's really into skin and allergy stuff, because a lot of the most effective medications are prescription. And there are some really awesome medications that have come out in the last couple of years. Apoquel, if you can get it, Atopica, those are both really, really effective. Of course, you know, prednisone is the old standby everybody uses. So I would say, I mean, yeah, we can try the antihistamines and the fish oil, but your best bet and your honestly the most effective use of your money would probably be find a vet who, they don't need to be a specialist in dermatology, but just somebody like me who just loves dermatology and is really willing to embrace every facet of this case, because unfortunately it's not as simple as give your dog Benadryl, have a nice day. A lot of my allergy patients I see are on like 4 different medications because it takes that many to get it under control. So I'm not trying to paint a picture of, oh my gosh, this can't be fixed, but it's not like, oh, just get this shampoo or you'll be fine. I want to be really upfront with you and say, yeah, it could be a complicated deal. So sorry to burst your bubble. Maybe Roger can make it sound a little bit more positive.
Maybe not. So what you may want to think about is grabbing your dog and taking a drive or flying to Florida, because we live in skin. I mean, when I left New York in practice, you know, you see a lot of atopic and food allergic skin disease anywhere, you know, anywhere. But I moved here and it's like I felt like I died and woke up a veterinary dermatologist. So we combat this, I would say, 30 5% of my cases on a daily basis are dermatology cases, which is just crazy. And then if you throw in like the ones that are allergic but not dermatologic, not skin related, so the respiratory ones, the sinusitis, the conjunctivitis, it might be 50%. It's just crazy. And you can hear my nose stuffed up, and I'm not an allergic person. I'm not sick right now. You know, so it's crazy here. And a couple of things I've learned in the process is that, and of course we learned this in school, allergies aren't cured, they're managed, right? You're never going to cure an allergy. If you're allergic, you're allergic. It's not going to go away. So anybody's going to tell you they're going to cure the allergy, they're selling you a bill of goods, or they're just naive and not really, I don't know, realistic, I guess is the best way
honest
to put it.
Yeah.
Honest, realistic, whatever. So you brought up Apoquel. And at first, I thought Apoquel was God's gift to dermatology cases. And it is very good. But one of the things that I learned, not just in the course of using it quite a bit, but in the course of having done some follow-up CE on it, most recently at NABC conference, if there's no itchiness involved, like major itchiness, it's useless. It's all about blocking those interleukins, right? And you're a molecular biologist, right? So you understand the inflammatory cascades and the pathways. But the main thrust of Apoquel is it blocks interleukins, which are inflammatory mediators that lead to the itchiness. Am I correct on that?
Mm-hmm.
So if there's no itchiness, so you have chronic ears, or you have chronic interdigital dermatitis or furunculosis, or what we call lick granulomas, they're not necessarily itchy, but it could be absolutely useless, you know? Now, of course, Atopica is a great product. I agree with you. It cost a bloody fortune.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So Cocker Spaniel, what do you think it would cost to treat a Cocker Spaniel with Atopica?
Actually, it's a smaller dog. So, most of my dogs, it could still be $80, $100 a month. I mean, it's still not cheap, but that's why it's good to just talk to a vet and see what options they have.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I don't know about you, but I see a lot of chubby Cocker Spaniels. Not that I'm accusing it all here, Dave, but I've seen them, some of them approaching 50 pounds, which is obscene. But
wow.
So you got a 50-pound Cocker, you know, it's not $100 a month.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, they could be a couple $100 a month. And actually, let me, if you don't mind, there's a story just popped in my mind that I think maybe you'll find inspiration by. I don't know. I had a patient named Mudgy, and Mudgy had no hair. He had chronic skin. I mean, this dog was one skin disaster after another. I mean, bacterial infections, yeast infections. He was on so many different anti-allergy medications. Owner's job transferred him to Wyoming. Mudgy's life got better. Oh my gosh, Mudgy had hair. Mudgy was not on any medications. They sent me pictures of the dog. I was like, that is not the same dog. He has hair. He's adorable. And then guess what? The job transferred them back to Illinois. Mudgy's hair all fell out again.
Wow.
So a lot of allergens depend on your environment, and Mudgy was just such a drastic example. I mean, the family seriously considered moving back to Wyoming for the dog just because it was so miserable here.
Yeah.
But that's why I tell people it's – you can't, like you said, you can't cure them without moving, you know?
Right, right.
We did everything we could, but Mudgy still was just never the same. And we knew how well he could do when he was away from all those allergens, but trying to manage them, we were as successful as we could be, but it was never great. You'll never get perfection.
No, that's a great point. So Dave, you can move to Wyoming, give that a shot, or Arizona. That's another good one.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this, and Dr. Karen, I'd like you to weigh in on this as well. When I'm looking at feet, when feet are involved, it's for me, it's almost never a food allergy, or at least food allergy is not the primary player in that process, mm-hmm. because feet to me is contact hypersensitivity. So food trials are never a bad idea. You got to buy the dog food anyway. Taste of the Wild is semi hypoallergenic because it's got the grain free, but realistically, when we're looking at food allergies, it's not. I mean, grains are a player, they're part of it, but it's usually the beef or the chicken, right? So, but for me, when feet are involved, I'm looking for environmental, and I'm looking to, you know, again, like you brought up, Apoquel, Atopica, Certainly, like you said in the last episode, fish oils, just there's no downside. Do it. Do the fish mm-hmm. oils. And I'm going to just take it one step further and just say, you know, an antihistamine non-prescription, I feel I can recommend. I know, Dr. Karen, you're not too comfortable with that, but Benadryl, it's used quite often incorrectly by owners. They actually underdose it. The actual dose and frequency is 1 mg/lb 3 times a day. So there's no reason you can't try that. From my point of view, give that a shot. Now, it does not have the same efficacy in animals as it does in people. So you want to give it a good 1 to 2 weeks before you decide it's going to work or not going to work. You know, maybe combine that with some fish oils, keep doing your shampoo. And then if that's not working out, you know, absolutely, you know, talk to your veterinarian about, again, the Apoquil and Atopica that Dr. Karen brought up. Good question, though. How relevant in our profession, too, right? The allergies.
Oh, a story of our lives, seriously. Yeah.
What's your percentage of cases? So I said, you know, 30 to 50%. What's your percentage, you think?
Oh, it's seasonal. So during the summer, it can be 100%. When I used to work in a clinic, I had an entire day where every single patient had an ear infection. I did not see a patient with a normal ear the entire day. I mean, it was that crazy. Yeah. So, I mean, in the summer, it can be close to 100% of my cases are skin and ear related.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not just Florida. It's anywhere where things grow.
Yes.
Right. So, great question, Dave. Please feel free to follow up with us at some point and let us know how things go. And I really appreciate the contribution to the program. So, Dr. Karen, let's talk about a spay neuter. So, I think when people hear spay, they don't quite understand what a spay is. Now, you're a female human. Why don't you share with us what a spay is?
Well, a spay, I got to tell you, I ran a dog rescue before I went to vet school. And from the rescue sense, you know, spay neuter. Oh, how big of a deal is a spay? Because they act like, you know, it's so important they have to be done. And then I realized a spay is a big, 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 big surgery. I mean, it is a total hysterectomy, and it's more than a hysterectomy. It's actually an ovariohysterectomy. So they're taking out the entire uterus and the ovaries. So if you know any family members or friends who had a hysterectomy, you know they weren't bouncing back the next day, you know, going back to work. It was a big deal. So it also is a surgery that can have a lot of complications because it is such a big deal. By big deal, what I mean is what causes me personal anxiety about doing a spay. Maybe this is getting a little bit too into my psyche here. But when you're doing a spay, you're removing these ovaries, and there are very big blood vessels that feed these ovaries. And you have to tie those suckers off really, really well to keep the animal from bleeding to death internally. And the gold standard is to tie them off twice in case one of your ties, you know, breaks or fails or something. In my abundant and retentive nature, I think my record is 5 ties on one just because I didn't feel comfortable with them. And I had to sleep at night, and knock on wood, none of mine have ever bled out. So thank you. But all it takes is if you're in a hurry and one of those ties slips, you can have a dog who bleeds to death internally. I mean, that's a big deal. This isn't just spay, you know, 5-minute surgery and you're gone. So I always tell people that once I went to vet school and realized how involved a spay was, I actually hate doing them. So because they're so stressful, because you've got, you know, all these blood vessels and, oh my gosh, if it's, is this too much blood? I don't know. So, you know, it is a big, big, big deal. Now, neuters, on the other hand, not to, you know, say that it's less of a big deal, but it is, because you're not actually entering the abdomen, you know. In a spay, you actually have to open up their entire abdomen. Like, you're shoving intestines out of the way. You got spleens. You got bladders. You got all kinds of stuff right there, you know.
Oh, yeah. No joke.
Hopefully normal stuff. Where neuters, you don't actually go into the abdomen. You just kind of slice in the skin. So neuters are less invasive than a spay. And I'll let you kind of expound upon that a little bit.
Okay, yeah, so we'll cover, you know, what we're most familiar with as far as, you know, anthropomorphizing and putting ourselves in the, you know, the place of the dog. Well, or cat. Cat neuters are even less invasive, I think.
Yeah.
But at any rate, I mean, I look at, I'm 41 years old, and a lot of my friends are, you know, in that general age category, and So what's happening is a lot of them are getting fixed, so to speak, not castrated, but you know, the old vasectomy, and a vasectomy is even less invasive than a castration, right? Because you can still bleed out from improper ligatures tying off those testicular arteries and veins. It's not likely going to happen, but it could happen, and it's certainly not something you want to go through. But I talked to like any friend of mine who's had the vasectomy, and I would ask him, so I'm just trying to get a consensus here. You know, that's something that is an elective procedure that you pay out of pocket for. It's not something your insurance is going to cover for the most part, at least here in Florida. I don't know about Illinois, but Florida is not known for its wonderful health insurance. So I asked them, you know, do you shop around or do you get recommendations from the best doctors? Well, everybody said, well, hell no, I'm not going to shop around. I'm going to go for the best doctor. I'm like, okay, right. And you're not getting a full castration that it's got to, you know, have a little incision closed and proper ligatures placed so you don't bleed and all that. So, you know, from that point of view, and I haven't gone for the vasectomy, but if I were to choose to go there, no, I am not price shopping. I am going to go for the best surgeon, you know, and I think you would agree for the Overo hysterectomy if you had to go through one of those things.
Oh, yeah, and I wouldn't have Larry do it in the alley, you know, that's for sure.
So I'm going to talk about, so why are you going to pay more in my clinic? We talked about AHA, Dr. Karen. Let's explain what AHA is. It's the American Animal Hospital Association. It is a voluntary participation to get your clinic AHA certified. What AHA certification means is that when we're in veterinary school, there's a university standard. In Dr. Karen and I's case, it was University of Illinois in the teaching hospital where we were taught a standard. And what happens is after graduation, especially back in the day, I remember my first clinic I worked at, very, very not university-like, there's a sort of gradual gravitation towards cutting corners, not doing things quite the way you did them in school, to the extent that some aren't even scrubbing their hands before surgery. They're just throwing on some sterile gloves and not gowning up and, you know, using a little postage stamp drape to do their spay, which is just appalling to me. So what AHA does is it's a voluntary participation, and you actually are saying that I want to be AHA certified because I want to prove to the general public and I want the standards of my clinic to be in line with university standard. Have you worked in AHA hospitals?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I worked in two. The first one I worked in, I actually was there when they were becoming AHA accredited. So I was actually part of the process of gaining that accreditation,
right?
Which, talk about jumping through flaming hoops. Wow.
Yeah, we went through it last year. It's not easy.
Yeah, and it's very rigorous, and it's a lot of it's very meticulous. Let me tell you, no stone is left unturned when the AHA people come and inspect your clinic. And it's not just you fill out a form, you pay a couple $100 and now you're AHA. No, they actually send inspectors to your clinic to watch your entire staff work and make sure you're doing it right. I mean, it's pretty stringent. It's not something you just buy on the internet like so many accreditations are these days, it seems, you know. And they actually review your medical records. Obviously not all of them, but they'll spot review them. So no, it's a great way if you're looking. If there's two vet clinics you can't decide between and one is AHA and one is not, I would go with the AHA one just because it at least means that they care and they're trying to say, hey, we are maintaining the highest standard that is required.
That's a great point. Yeah. And you know what else AHA does for AHA clinics through there and get certification? They are recommending appropriate pricing. They're recommending best business practices. They're doing all of these things to make sure that you're also not just great medicine, but as ethical as possible, charging what you're supposed to, not too little, not too much, you know, doing what's right for the health of your clinic, but also for the health of your clients. Really, it's really a great information source, and they do a lot of studies and whatnot. So when you come into my clinic, what you're going to, you know, you're first going to have a pre-anesthetic examination. We may comp that if you ultimately decide to do the spay with us. We may give you that examination feedback to credit towards your spay. But you're going to have a full examination because you got to listen for heart murmurs, feel pulses, feel for, you know, hernias, things that might complicate the procedure. Just give them a good once over. It's amazing the things that you can hear with your stethoscope, right? I mean, how often do you come across heart murmurs?
Oh, yeah. And it's, let me tell you, it brings surgery to a screeching halt if you didn't know about it before and you're like, whoa, heart murmur, stop everything. Yeah. So, yeah.
Or arrhythmias and, you know, other things that go wrong. So examination to me is a huge key, which a lot of the ones, at least around me, the low cost ones, they're not even a technician gives the examination. Nothing against technicians, but, you know, they're not veterinarians. They should not be the ones responsible for dictating the anesthetic health of a patient that just about to go under anesthesia, which a wonderful anesthesia professor in Illinois told me back in the day, and I'll never forget this. Never forget that anesthesia is the controlled release and administration of potentially lethal chemicals. I mean, it's really, if you look at it in that context, it's nothing to take lightly, even for a neuter.
Mm-hmm. Well, and actually, when you put it that way, it makes you not want to do anesthesia at all, you know?
Well, luckily, it's come a long way. So you've agreed to do the spay in my clinic. I'm going to recommend, if it's a patient under 3 years, I'm going to recommend what's called a mini profile. Just give us basic liver and kidney values, total solids, and we also are going to just run a quick urine dipstick to just make sure that everything looks good there. Kidneys are functioning normal from that point of view. And we don't charge too much for it, but we don't hold you hostage to it. You can opt out of that, but we recommend it. So people, I don't know, I think it's like 70-30, 70% of the people go for it. Based on that information, we then put an IV catheter in. And for me, an IV catheter is so uber important because it's a port to very consistently administer the induction agent, but it's also a port to infuse IV fluids. To me, is uber important during an anesthetic procedure because maintaining blood pressure is one of the most important considerations of anesthesia during surgery. And without it, you can't administer fluids. So you had mentioned when we were just kind of talking about this episode that even the better low-cost ones are not really doing that standard, but they are offering it.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that?
Yes. IV fluids truly should be required under every anesthetic procedure, in my opinion, just because, like you said, it maintains blood pressure. It gives you access to a vein, which is uber important. If their heart stops, they get an arrhythmia. Do you want to be farting around trying to find a vein for 2 minutes to get the drugs in there? No, you want to get the drugs in there and save their life and get it going. Now, here in St. Louis, I'm on the Illinois side of St. Louis, if you're like, wait, I thought she was in Illinois. St. Louis is in Missouri, a little geography there. Anyway, we're actually really fortunate to have a couple actually really good low-cost spay-neuter clinics. Yes, corners are still cut. It's nothing like having it done in a normal vet clinic. But one of them actually offers IV fluids as an option. It costs extra, and so your low cost just became medium cost, I guess. I don't know. And they offer a little blood panel. You can take it or leave it. But the fact that they at least offer these things to people is nice. So you can at least get – and like by the time you pay for those, you're still paying a little bit less because these are subsidized programs, you know, than you would. And you're at least getting some increase in level of care than you would at just the, you know, cut-and-go kind of places where they don't even offer those. They don't even have them in the building. A lot of them don't.
And that's good to hear, honestly, because what I have going on around me is just, it's absolutely horrific. You know, that just, I wish that could be more of a standard for these places. There's one called the Spay-Neuter Express. I mean, that's just an awful name, don't you think? Spay-Neuter Express. Yeah. So, you know, at any rate, once the patient is induced with, we usually use propofol, you know, to me, that's my favorite induction agent because it's so well tolerated, so quickly metabolized. We use an endotracheal tube. We actually protect the airway a lot. There's one local, actually two local, that does put a mask on.
So,
Dr. Karen, tell us the importance of an endotracheal tube.
Oh, my gosh. So, I volunteered at a low-cost spay clinic a couple years ago, and they didn't use the tubes. They just used the mask. And I'm actually going to buy tubes out of my own pocket. They're so important. Okay. So what they are is it's actually a clear tube that you put down their throat into their windpipe, into their trachea, and you hook it up to the gas anesthetic, and it gives you a very direct means of having the pet breathe the gas and the gas not leaking into the room air around you, you know, when you can control how much oxygen they're getting, how much gas they're getting. If you don't do that, what I learned from working at the low-cost clinic, when they were just putting a mask on them, you cover their face with this mask, and they can breathe when they want, but you can't breathe for them like you can when they have a tube. And there's leakage. I actually had a dog start to wake up on the table. I had my hands full of intestines, and the dog starts kicking, and we're like, oh, we need to move the mask. You know, I mean, that's not cool.
Yeah.
That's an understatement, but just little things like endotracheal tubes are so important, and also because you cannot do CPR without one. If their heart stops, if they stop breathing, you have to have a tube in there so you can breathe for them.
Right.
So that's a huge game changer right there.
Yeah, and how much of that anesthesia gas are you breathing in? You're lucky you're awake during that. If the patient's waking up, it's a good thing you're not anesthetized and hitting the ground.
I didn't work there very long.
Right. Yeah, and rightfully so. So, yeah, endotracheal tube gets in. They're getting intravenous fluids. And here's a great one. There's a wonderful device. Costs about $10,000, but I love it. It's called the SurgiVet. While your patient or while your pet is under anesthesia in my hospital, no matter what procedure, I don't care if it's a neuter or a spay or even a little lump removal, they're going to be on a SurgiVet. SurgiVet is going to give us EKG. EKG is an electrical pulse of the heart. You can actually see what the heart's doing, and it's very easy to pick up on things going badly when you're looking at that little wave form. And then in addition, we're looking at blood pressure. And the big thing in the low-cost clinics, and I'm sure even maybe the one you worked in had the pulse oximeter. That's like their mm-hmm. monitoring device. Can you explain what a pulse oximeter is?
Oh, yeah. So that is they've been around for a while, and everybody has them. It's a little device you can clip to most commonly their tongue. I have seen it done on ears and toes with mild to moderate success. And basically it tells how much oxygen is getting through, which is important, but oxygen perfusion or how much oxygen is getting circulated around the dog is a great indicator of how well are they breathing? How is their heart beating? Because these are two things that are required to get oxygen going to all the organs around the dog. The problem with the pulse oximeter is, most of the time your oxygen saturation should be 100% because you want all of your cells that want oxygen. If they want it, they can have it, you know. With the pulse oximeter, if it falls below 95%, it becomes very, very inaccurate. And it's not a reflection of, oh, well, if you got this more expensive machine, that would be – no, it's just the design of the machine and just how they all are. So one instructor explained it to me this way. The pulse oximeter is great to let you know things are going well, but if they're not going well – you're standing on the edge of the cliff and you don't know if the cliff is 1 foot or 1 mile high. All it tells you is that you're at the edge of the cliff. So it's a good heads up. I mean, it's a great piece, but it's not something you can rely on totally to say, oh, if he's only at 94, then I think we're fine. You know, it's kind of hit or miss that way.
Yeah. So early in my career as an emergency and critical care veterinarian, one of my mentors, this is going way back to New York even. And he said, yeah, the pulse oximeter, it's better than nothing. but realistically, you know, when you look at death because of anesthesia or loss of stability on the table, directly related to anesthesia, and it does happen with spays and neuters, rarely, but it does happen. It's blood pressure anomalies more than anything. So the SurgiVet monitors blood pressure constantly. You could set it to every 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, or 10 minutes. Of course, I'm anal retentive, so I go every 2 minutes with it. So it monitors blood pressure, it monitors temperature, it monitors capnometer, which is your carbon dioxide accumulation in the body. So all of this information, and then in addition to that, we put this thing down their esophagus. So they have the endotracheal tube down their trachea, but down the esophagus we've got this little doodad called an esophageal stethoscope, which when you plug it into this audio device, it gives you a heartbeat that is so much louder than you could ever hear with your stethoscope. The whole room could hear it. It's like, poof, 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 you know, so you can hear the rhythm, you can see the rhythm, you can see the blood pressure, all this information just available you know, at a moment's notice, anything goes south, there's so many things you could do to fix it. And I will tell you that even with spays, especially like with the larger dogs, I see them go hypotensive all the time. And most of the time it would have worked itself out if I didn't notice, but I will turn to the technician and say, okay, let's crank up those fluids a bit. Let's turn down the anesthesia a bit, you know, whatever it takes to bring that pressure up gradually. You know, of course, with more invasive stuff, when we're doing the anesthesia, you start using things like dobutamine to bring up the pressure and whatnot. But, you know, having all that information is invaluable. Now, have you ever seen a low-cost clinic with a surgery vet?
Yeah, no. Well, and I was actually going to point out, too, you can have all the fancy equipment, but you also have to have people there. And a lot of low-cost clinics will have three surgeons and two technicians running like chickens with their heads cut off. I mean, I don't even know how they do this. Right. Where at a regular vet clinic, you'll have, most of them have a dedicated technician who is actually looking at the surgery vet, because you can have the surgery vet all the live long day, but if no one's looking at it, it's, you know, or listening to it or acting upon it, it's not going to do you much good. So having a dedicated technician who's there, because you're scrubbed in surgery, you can't, I mean, I've done it where I've tried to push things with my toes when I'm in surgery and nobody's around, you know, but having a technician there who can give the dobutamine or, you know, or actually respond is huge too. Just having personnel there to help you.
Thank you for bringing that up, because that is so important. And in my AHA hospital, that person's always going to be a CVT, certified veterinary technician. They've gone to school, they've gotten the certification. There is a difference. You know, I've worked with technicians trained on the job. Some of them can be very impressive, but having the knowledge, knowing the physiology, and understanding how the drugs work, what they do, and why we're doing the things we're doing, there's no replacement for that. Do you commonly see CVTs in low-cost clinics in your area? Because I don't really see them here. They hire any Joe Schmo and train them on the job.
Oh, actually, a couple of ours, we do have our, we call them RVTs in this area for registered RVTs, veterinary technicians. But yeah, they actually do. And it's unusual. And these technicians, I got to give a shout out to them because they're amazing. I mean, they've got 2-3 surgeries going on at the same time. They got 5 animals recovering from anesthesia all in a row on a blanket on the floor. They're trying to keep an eye on those, trying to induce more animals because the surgeons are saying, hey, I'm done. Where's my next one? Come on, I got 50 today. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't know how they keep their sanity and do the good job they do. But it's, if they had more people, obviously you'd have to pay them and, you know, right, that would cost more. But it's a very incredibly stressful job for these technicians too, because you've got so many things going on at once. You have so many animals under anesthesia that you really can't watch very well because you're being pulled 3 different directions at once, which is frustrating.
Yeah. So again, refreshing to hear that there's RVTs. Of course, it sounds like they're being stretched very thin, but you have now here, at least in my area, these low cost spay neuter clinics with the same types of people, with the same types of responsibility being stretched uber thin, but they're not RVTs, they're not CVTs, they're just on-the-job trained people getting paid the same amount of money that somebody at the McDonald's drive-thru is getting paid. You know, and that's concerning to me. You know, if it was my beloved pet, who I consider a family member, that would be very concerning to me, and people just don't realize what they're putting their pet into beforehand. So let's talk about the surgeon. So when I'm doing any surgery in my OR, I'm going to wear the AHA booties. I'm going to completely scrub my hands. Well, now we don't do the scrub anymore. That's old school. We hand wash our hands dry and then put that stuff on them. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, the pump. It doesn't dry your hands out, but I guess that's a human surgery standard now too, which...
You have skin on your hands at the end of the day.
You
actually
have skin left on your hands. Yeah, you don't have to scrub them so much. So you put that stuff on, which is AHA acceptable. Get into a gown. Cap and mask is on. Full sterile technique. Big old surgical drape across the table. So we're just exposing the incision area. And we're doing it at a standard that we would perform in a veterinary hospital. Now, the last article I did about this very topic was it was called You Get What You Pay For. You know, I went to the negative side of it. I'm focusing on the positive now. The positive is pay more to come to my clinic. And here's why. Not don't go there because they suck. But in that don't go there because they suck article, I actually took a picture of a low-cost spay neuter. It was a veterinarian, female veterinarian. And there's a picture of her on their website. So I felt free to put it on my blog to say, this is them advertising. She had this little postage stamp, and of course, Dr. Karen can see me. I'm holding up a sheet of paper, the notes that I'm using for this show, a sheet of computer paper.
8.5 by 11. Let me describe it for you there. Yes.
Is that what it is? I don't even know. A sheet of paper. That's how big her drape was. It was like a Labrador retriever. So by the time you're spaying them, they're like 40, 50 pounds, right? She got no gown on, no mask, no cap, and just gloves. And she's doing her spay with a big smile on her face. Like, come to us, look. Like, that was, you know, most vets doing that would want to be hiding that, not taking a picture of it. So not only are they acting in a very poor standard of sterile technique and surgery and what have you, they're proud of it. So what say you?
Oh, God.
Email you that article. That was before we met.
Oh, okay. Well, I will say, I mean, yeah, there's – I'm going to try to put a positive spin on this, too, and that's atrocious. And I've actually – and but Dr. Rogers is going to probably keel over when I say this, but I've actually done that when I worked at low-cost spay-neuter places, because that's what – you walk in the door, that's what they give you. You know, here I am. I'm this rescuer. I'm like, oh, I'll volunteer at the low-cost spay-neuter and – wow. But anyway, I will say that this side of that coin is, despite all of this, a lot of the animals, knock on wood, do well. So we do see our fair share of complications, you know, incisions getting infected, yada, yada, yada. But as long as they are, here's what I tell people. I'm like, you know, if you're on disability, if you're on government aid and coming up with that $20 to afford the low-cost spay is a stretch for you, and there is no way you can do the $300. God, yes, do the low-cost spay and get your dog spayed, okay? I mean, don't wait 5 years to save up, you know, for the other, whatever it is, you know? So, and if you have a young animal who is otherwise healthy, like if you got a cat who shows up at your yard and you're feeding her and she's going to have kittens every 3 months, She'll probably be fine. The ones I tell people that I'm like, try to really, really avoid doing these in the low-cost spay neuters are the ones, the big old dogs, the big dogs who've had litters, those are the female dogs especially, or any older animal or any overweight animal, those are more likely to have complications. And those, if you can at all, really try to go to a clinic where they have the anesthesia monitoring and the sterile technique and everything. But as a rescuer, seeing just the gross amount of pet overpopulation, I mean, low-cost spay-neuter clinics exist for a reason. And like I said, here in St. Louis, we're fortunate to have some pretty good ones where it's like, you know what? If that's the way you got to do it to get them spayed, do it. And at least they're spayed, and at least they're not, you know, contributing to more pet overpopulation.
That's a very good point. You know, it's better, like the pulse oximeter, it's better than nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah. And seriously, I don't want to browbeat it too much because you can only work within your budget. You know, you got to feed yourself, you got to feed your family, got to pay your rent. I get that. The ones that really tick me off, though, is they pull up in a Lexus. They got their what is it, Louis Vuitton purse. Yeah. You know, they got their cell phone, and you could tell they do something pretty savvy for a living because the earpiece is in there. At least they're pretending to. They got the earpiece always, you know, the perpetual cell phone earpiece
because
they got to be connected all the time. They'll do their puppy visits with me and then we'll give them the treatment plan for the spay or neuter. We don't call them estimates in my clinic. They're treatment plans with associated costs. Estimate makes me sound like a contractor. I hate that. Not a contractor. Okay. I'm a veterinarian. So we give them the treatment plan. And then they're like, that's ridiculous. I could get this done for $50. Okay, well, just read all the things that you get and how we do it. Make sure you compare and contrast, compare apples to apples, because I'll guarantee you it's not the same. Then they go do it. I had one that got recently really, really botched. The lady, same type of person, had the dog taken to one of these places. I don't want to get sued, so I won't say the name. But she's like, you know what? Everything went great. My dog did wonderful. It was great. You guys just overcharged. You don't need to do all that stuff. Well, 6 months later, the dog comes in to heat.
Oh, ouch. Rip.
I wanted to do the Ace Ventura pet detective laugh. You know? And I said, oh, how about that? She goes, well, what's going on? I'm like, well, I'm guessing there might be some lady parts still in there. So she goes, well, what am I going to do? I'm like, you need to go back there. That's where you had the spay done. And she goes, well, can you help me? I'm like, well, I can do an estrogen test, or not an estrogen test, a luteolizing hormone test.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. LH. And I had to send it to like Michigan State because, you know, your regular lab doesn't do it. And what's that going to cost? It's going to be a couple $100. Well, I'm not paying for that. I'm like, all right, well, you need to take that up with them because you chose to have the spade on there. So if anyone's going to do that test for free, it's going to be those people. So she goes back there. They decide to do it for 50%. The LH test proves that the dog is clearly has lady parts in there. So now they won't do it. They go, you need to go back to that other clinic.
Oh, my God. And that have, poor woman.
And have them, and have them do it. So then, you know, I give her the quote, and I'm like, so I'm going back in there. There's going to be adhesions. There's going to be all kinds of stuff going on. That's going to make it tough to find these lady parts.
Can I just tell you that those lady parts are usually the size of half of a pea, you're trying to find. Right. So just so people understand, this is not like you're looking for a big golf ball here in the abdomen.
Absolutely. So long story short, I go back in there. I find that there is a little piece of the one ovary still there, right at the caudal pole of the kidney. And the other one, the entire ovary is still there. I thought to myself,
wow.
How do you mess that up? You know, obviously this was an assembly line situation going on. And, you know, so it ended up costing her a lot more money, you know.
And the poor dog having to go through two surgeries.
All of that, yeah. I understand. There's people that, look, you need to take that route. For this lady, it was about getting the best price and making a point to me that I'm just gouging, you know. And that's annoying because, again, she pulls up in her, you know, white Lexus with the tinted windows. And, you know, she dresses very well. And it's like, okay, maybe one less lunch at, you know, on the beach at that fancy cafe that you always go to. You can have your spay done properly. But one last thing I want to mention before I close, and we were discussing this a little bit before the show, I do what's called a reverse line block with bupivacaine. So as I'm closing my incision, I'm going along the body wall, and that's our entry point to actually get into the abdomen and expose the innards, so to speak. And I'm just backing out my needle as I'm injecting sort of backwards and doing this line block before I throw my sutures in. That's going to provide that dog 8 hours of numbness. So they're going to wake up feeling very, very comfortable as the pain management that we've given them both pre and post-operatively and then onward for the next several days really kicks in. And then, of course, they get beyond that 72-hour period where post-operatively they're not feeling as much pain. So, and I do that for the skin as well. So are low-cost clinics doing any of that that you're aware of?
No. but they do offer pain meds. You usually have to ask for them. And I tell people, make sure you ask for pain meds because they might not give it to you if you don't specifically ask for it. And they'll charge $5, $10 more or so. But I think one point, too, we need to make about the low-cost clinics is a misnomer people have is that, oh, well, they can do a spay for $50. They're not doing a spay for $50. They're subsidized. They're always doing fundraisers, trivia nights. They have grants. They have donors. So there's other – you cannot do a spay for $50. Okay. Right. So yeah. There's other funding coming in. So there, that other funding makes up the difference too. I mean, yeah, corners are being cut a little bit, but also you still have to pay for anesthesia and autoclaves and surgical packs and doctors, you know? So, it's artificially low is what I often tell people too, you know, just because they're trying to make it as low cost as possible. And that's fantastic. And they're always asking for donations and it's great, but it's not that, you know, the regular vet clinic is gouging you when the spay actually costs $20, $50 because it doesn't. It truly does cost more than that. You just don't see it.
That's a great point. That's an absolutely great point and a wonderful point to close on. Anything else you want to throw out there before we close for the evening?
I think they've listened to us enough tonight.
we get talking, which is hard to stop, isn't it? I definitely found the right co-host for sure. Well, thank you for another wonderful evening of joyful discussion It's always. I'm telling you, I'm having so much more fun than doing this by myself.
Well, I don't know how you talk to yourself for 30 minutes at a time. I was like, oh my God, how can you do that? So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I talk to myself. Thanks for thanks for sharing that.
Sorry.
No, I honestly, it's so much better to talk to someone. I have my script, not a script, but I got my kind of notes, and I know what I'm going to talk about. I'm so passionate about it that I'll just talk. But it's so much better to hear your voice, you know, intersperse in your ideas. So this is a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying this. So thank you very much for joining.
Full disclosure that we have no notes. Like, I don't have any notes. This is pretty much just off the cuff of us too. So don't think this is rehearsed, guys. Because
no.
I think it's pretty obvious it's not. Maybe.
Well, I think that's the best part of it. And we have our little, like, really brief discussion beforehand, but we don't want to get into too much detail because spontaneous is way more fun.
Yeah.
I think it keeps it real.
So, oh, yeah. Oh, it's real, baby.
So I'm going to have to take next Thursday off because I will be podcasting on my lacrosse podcast. I'm going to have one of the local college coaches on my lacrosse podcast. So that's a whole other deal I have because, you know, I don't have enough to do.
Right.
But I would say let's reconvene in 2 weeks. Will that work for you, Dr. Karen?
That sounds like a plan.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. And remember to pay more at my veterinary clinic to have your dog spayed. Good night.
Thanks, guys.
When you save on auto insurance for driving safe with USAA Safe Pilot, you'll feel like a big deal. Even in a traffic jam. Save up to 30% with USAA Safe Pilot. Restrictions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.